Welcome to Credit Exchange, where we speak with the biggest newsmakers and market shapers in finance. I'm Lisa Lee, your host and managing editor of Credit Flux. Today, I'm here with Mike Dennis, head of European Credit at Ares. Welcome, Mike. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Lisa. Good to be with you.
Ares has become one of the biggest pioneers of private credit direct lending in both the US and Europe. And recently, you guys raised the biggest European direct lending fund ever, a record-setting, mouth-gaping $30 billion. Congratulations, and tell me a little bit of how this happened.
Yeah, thanks very much for that, Lisa. You're right. We closed on our sixth flagship direct lending fund here in Europe in Q4 last year. We closed on 17 billion euros of LP commitments, which was up from 11 billion in our predecessor fund, ACE V. So you're right. We were absolutely delighted with our LP support and the fact we could get the fundraising done by the end of last year.
And to you, when you look at such a large haul and investor support, what does that tell you about the state of the direct lending market in Europe?
I think investors are still excited about the opportunity set here. If you think about the drivers for our market, banks are continuing to retrench in the middle market, giving room for players like Ares to take market share. From an investor's perspective, private credit gives good yield, low volatility, good cash distributions on a quarterly basis. There's a lot to like about the asset class from an LP perspective, and I think that's what you've seen with their support for our latest fund.
And I know you hate this term, but I'm going to use it. Were any of the LPs and the people you spoke with concerned about this end of the golden era of private credit? And what was your answer to them?
You're correct, Lisa. I've never liked that phrase. I don't think necessarily we were in a golden age of private credit. I think, as I've just said, the opportunity set is still incredibly attractive. We're producing robust returns for risk that is pretty conservative. I mean, our strategy is predominantly around senior secured risk. And with base rates at where they are, investors can capture a pretty interesting yield for that risk. Again, I don't like the term the golden age of private credit, but I think the opportunity set today is attractive as it has been.
So still attractive. And especially when you look at Europe, you look at an economy that perhaps isn't as robust as the US market, but seems like there's a lot of pockets of opportunities. And also the direct lending market seems more conservative. There's still covenants. The doc seems stronger than the US. So how do you sort of look at the investment landscape right now?
Yeah, I think there's two questions in there. The first question I'll refer to is really about the terms, the governance that you were alluding to in terms of covenants. And you're absolutely right. In the core middle market here in Europe, the terms, the documentation is still pretty lender friendly in the sense that, you know, most deals come with financial maintenance covenants and good governance. I think in terms of the other question around the US-European comparison and GDP, you've got to remember that direct lending really is all about selectivity. At the core of our strategy is about origination. We try to originate a lot of deal opportunity and then be very, very selective with what we ultimately choose to invest in. And that selectivity really focuses on sectors that display high characteristics around defensiveness, i.e. they are not wholly correlated to GDP. You know, we're talking about investing in sectors like business services and healthcare, education, software technology. So when you look at the portfolio performance and you look at the sectors that we invest in, those demonstrate good growth. They don't demonstrate huge amounts of cyclicality. And therefore, I don't think necessarily just looking at GDP is the way to evaluate the attractiveness or not of the asset class.
Also, you've been in Europe for a very long time now. Ares was one of the first, I think, shapers and movers. Like, even when no one knew what private credit was, had no fathom idea what direct lending was, you guys have been here for a really long time. And how are you seeing that evolve? Because this is something that you've been doing for a long time. And you're looking at this market right now and this GDP right now. And you also have geopolitical concerns. You have tariff issues, a new US president that's really making waves in Europe.
You're right. I mean, look, we've been here in Europe since 2007. And so actually, we've seen different cycles come and go. We invested through the GFC. We've had a portfolio that's performed through COVID. We've obviously been through an interest rate cycle. So I actually sit here in 2025 being able to demonstrate to LPs that this asset class is durable, that actually the asset class performs through cycles. And so you're right, there are certain geopolitical events on the horizon or with us today, such as the tariff situation in the US, other geopolitical issues globally. But I think we've demonstrated at Ares and as an asset class that this asset class can perform through cycles.
And then where do you see the most excitement when you travel around the world for European credit?
The good news for us is it's very broadly based. So if you look at our LP base, it's not just here from Europe. Actually, we've got LP support right across the globe, in Asia, in Australasia, in the US, of course, here in the UK. So it's very, very broad based.
And even as you raise this huge fund for your direct lending fund, your wealth channel has been doing really well as well. So can you speak a little bit to the individual wealth channel in Europe, which I think is much more nascent than in the US?
That's a good observation. I think we would see in the US the democratization of private credit, i.e. the growth of the retail channel, that is well established. And Ares and other players are raising capital through that channel. Here in Europe, it is nascent, and it's really only in the last 1 or 2 years that managers have started to look at raising capital from that retail channel. So it's nascent, but it is growing. But respect of the amounts of capital raised in the institutional capital today in Europe, it's still small.
So it's growing. Where do you see the biggest uptake? Is it France? Is it Spain? Is it German? Do you see a difference, or is it sort of all slowly growing across the board throughout Europe?
Again, I would say it's very broad-based, Lisa. We're seeing kind of retail demand from all those jurisdictions you've just mentioned.
And what do you think of the education process? Because it is a big education, whereas the US, they've had BDCs and ETFs. Americans are very comfortable investing by themselves. Here, how are Europeans looking at this sort of, for what probably for them, a relatively new asset class?
That's a good distinction to make. I think overall, as a generalist comment, I would say that the US consumer is better educated from a financial perspective. And you're right, there have been channels for retail investors to access this asset class, such as the BDCs, for a long time. In Europe, that's not the case. So there is a period now of education. We're tending to do this, and the retail channel exists through the private banks, first and foremost. And so you are actually pitching to consumers or investors that are relatively well qualified, i.e. they're educated. But yes, you're right. There is a financial intermediation or an advisory gap between the US and Europe. European clients tend to be less well advised than their US counterparts.
And some of your peers have opted to try to provide US direct lending to Europeans. And you guys have this particular fund that I'm talking about is also European direct lending for Europeans. And how is that reception? Like, how does a German think, wow, should I invest in the US, but I could also invest in Germany? Or the Dane could be like, I can invest in Denmark. How do you see their sort of feeling about investing in their own domestic companies? Does it matter to them or not?
I think it does matter to some extent, but I think people are taking this asset class into their portfolios for diversification, for cash yield, as we talked about earlier. You know, we get asked the question a lot, should we be investing in US direct lending or European direct lending? My answer would be you should do both. Both markets exhibit some really interesting characteristics. And if you have both in your portfolio, then that's a good diversifier.
And one of the things that I think in the going back to the golden age of credit was private credit was the BSL market, the broadly public market, was shuttered the past 2 years, not last year in 2024, but 2023 and 2022. That market came roaring back. CLOs came roaring back. Yet at the same time, what I thought was interesting was I thought all those old sponsors would go back to the BSL market. For one, they did not. And two, with that market open, what's making the private credit market still attractive?
If you think about our strategy, you know, we've been doing this as you identified, we've been doing this since 2007, and we've built our strategy and we've been consistent with our strategy. That is, it's focused on the core middle market. So companies with 10 to 75 million euros of EBITDA, broadly speaking. There are times when we've opportunistically lent to larger companies than 75 million of EBITDA. That happens when the capital markets are more constrained from a liquidity perspective. And we saw that in 2021, 22. Yes, that reversed in 23 and certainly in 2024. The liquid markets were very liquid and pretty robust. For us, as I say, the strategy is very consistent in terms of its middle market focus. And as and when the capital markets open and close, of course, we have the scale of capital now to be opportunistic, to back those larger companies as and when required. Now, you highlighted also an interesting trend, which is, I would define as the convergence between public and private credit markets, because even in 2024, when the syndicated loan and the high yield markets came back, some financial sponsors and some borrowers still chose to come to the private markets for their capital. And there are reasons why that should be the case. It might be about confidentiality. It might be that the issuer doesn't want to go through a ratings process. It might be that it's a buy and build thesis where actually it's not really about just the day one capital structure. It's about, can I find a financing counterparty who I can trust to deliver when I need future financing down the line to support my equity thesis? So there's a number of reasons why borrowers would access private capital even today when the public markets are pretty liquid.
The BSL market is wide open right now, so maybe the biggest deal might still go there, but there's always volatility in the horizon. You never know with the BSL market. What do you think the biggest, given the fundraising you've done and some of your peers have done in Europe, what's the biggest direct lending loan Europe could do right now if you cobble you guys together?
Sure. I think in Europe, it's conceivable that you could do a 2 to 3 billion euro unitranche loan. I don't think private markets would have any problem absorbing that kind of capital.
Wasn't 4.8 the largest ever? Do you think we could exceed that right now? Or do you think that was probably much the cap?
I don't think that's the cap. I think that 4.8 you refer to was probably driven from the US market. And certainly when issuers can raise multi-currencies across the US and Europe, that obviously increases capacity. But look, I think we're still on a journey here. And I think private market deals at the top end will continue to get bigger.
And is that exciting for you? How do you think about these bigger deals? Are you just as excited about the middle market ones?
It is exciting, but also it's opportunistic. And as I said before, Lisa, our strategy has been incredibly consistent since 2007, which is to say we find enough deployment opportunity and a growing market in that core middle market. Those bigger deals are great as and when they come along, but that's not what I'm going to base the strategy of this business on.
And do you ever worry that the space is getting crowded? Everyone seems to be getting in, wants to get in. Isn't a US credit shop that doesn't seem to want to get into Europe, which has been harder than I suspected to actually do, by the way. You guys are a first mover, but is getting crowded or no, there's space for everyone still?
I think there's still space for everybody. That said, I do think it is hard as a new entrant to come into the market. I mean, let's not forget, Europe is not one market, right? This is not the US, which is more homogenous in nature. This is Europe where, you know, you have different jurisdictions, different cultures, different banking laws, etc. That's the reason why we have 6 offices across Europe, because every market is slightly different. And therefore, if you want to come into Europe and be successful in the middle market, you need to have local presence. And that takes time to build. That also takes commitment from a financial perspective. So I think the barriers to scale in the European market are just so much larger than they are in the US.
You wouldn't be a credit guy, Mike, if you didn't have some worries. What is your worry as the things that when you walk into work, you're like, okay, I've got to think about this, keeps you up at night. Is it default? Is it rates? Is it economic slowdown? What is your worry as you do your job every day?
The things that I can't control. So when you talk about underwriting or defaults, et cetera, we can control that at Ares, i.e., you know, we're in control of the assets that we invest in, you know, our underwriting process, et cetera. The things you worry about are the things you can't control. So, you know, regulation, macro events, et cetera, that are just beyond, as I say, the control of what we do on a day-to-day basis.
And talking about regulation, can we touch on that? How are the European regulators looking at this growing asset class? In the US, I feel like under the Trump regime, there's going to be less regulation. Not quite sure what's going on in Europe, though.
I think at the moment, regulators are making sure that they're educated on the asset class. I think the questions that we're seeing are all around transparency, and we are absolutely supportive of that in terms of transparency into the asset class. And so we're happy to work with and talk to regulators and give them the transparency on the asset class that they require. But that's where their attention is at the moment.
And then you don't just do private credit and direct lending. So tell me a little bit about some of the other asset classes and what's the perspective and what do you find attractive and what are you thinking like this is a good year for this asset class?
The good news about Aries, I guess, is the fact that we've got now a broad product set in credit products right across the kind of risk and liquidity spectrum. You know, we've got a growing business in alternative credit, which is financing financial assets rather than corporate credit assets. And again, that's an asset class that's benefiting from the same trends we've benefited from for years, which is banks ceding share or banks shedding assets on their balance sheet in this asset class. Another area that I would highlight is our opportunistic credit product, which is a business that it provides capital to companies that are, you know, really great companies, but just have the wrong balance sheet today. And some of these deals were structured when interest rates were zero. Interest rates have gone up to 4-5%, and therefore capital structures, you know, which were structured back in 2020 and prior, now don't make that much sense. And therefore, there's this opportunistic credit opportunity to provide capital to delever cash pay leverage on balance sheets, or to provide growth capital where the owners, the financial sponsors, don't have capacity to follow their money. And so this is a really interesting opportunity that we're seeing today in our, as I say, our opportunistic credit business.
The opportunistic credit, where is it, any sector specific, country specific that you can direct us?
Very much like the rest of our credit businesses, we tend to be sector and country agnostic, really.
That's a lot on your plate to think about and do. So many countries in Europe, right?
That's why we have a big team, Lisa. I mean, just in direct lending, we have over 90 investment professionals, and that's not counting the professionals we have in our alternative credit, our liquid credit, or our opportunistic credit businesses.
It is a big shop, right? That does seem to me a differentiator from some of the upstarts that have come in, that you have so many people on the ground. So how do you manage all of that, given that different language, different customs, all under one roof?
It's simply, I think it's about communication and coordination. You know, we have a very collaborative culture here at Aries. So the individuals who are running opportunistic credit and alternative credit, and us here in kind of direct lending, we're based in the same office. We talk all the time. It's really just about communication and coordination. It really is.
And then going back to sort of like the macro thing that I brought up in the earlier, credit spreads are just tightening across the board. When you look at public credit especially, has things got ahead of itself? And is private credit the same spread tightening, or is it a little bit buffered from that wind right now?
Private credit, especially when you focus on the middle market, the spread compression that you've seen in public credit markets has been less pronounced, that's for sure. There has been a little bit of spread tightening just because deal volumes have been slightly muted. Obviously, the M&A markets have been slow for a little while now. I think with deal volumes coming back, that should reverse itself somewhat. But in terms of the LP view would just look at the premium that private credit can offer to public credit. And that premium has actually stayed pretty constant.
Oh, that's really interesting. What is that right now in Europe, generally?
In Europe, you're still seeing premium of 300 basis points or above, which is what I think LPs expect and enjoy about the private credit asset class, and have seen that over the long run.
And is that for liquidity? What exactly are you getting for that premium?
Yeah, some would argue that's the liquidity premium. That's the premium for locking up your capital and investing in illiquid assets. So yeah, I think that's a good way to frame it.
And any final thoughts as we just sort of navigated throughout Europe, different asset classes and the tone at this moment?
No, look, I think 2025 could be an exciting year. I think M&A markets are starting to come back. Buyers, sellers have got more confidence to come to the table, because I think we all now know what the path for interest rates looks like. I think it looks like they've peaked. It looks like they're on the way down. Therefore, cost of capital is getting a little cheaper. That should give people the confidence to come to the table and transact. And therefore, I think most of the people I talk to are relatively optimistic about deal volumes going forward for 2025.
When will we see those deal volumes actually hit? Next quarter, the second half? When do you think?
Sure, there's always a lag between, you know, advisors preparing pitches and due diligence reports being written for sale processes that are coming to market. But as I say, everyone I talk to is relatively busy on the preparation side. So, you know, you could see Q2, Q3 being relatively buoyant.
I'm sure that's really great news for a lot of private credit folks with firepower, also M&A advisors and bankers. And more exciting news for us to cover. Thank you so much, Mike. This has really been great to have you on.
Great to speak to you, Lisa. Thanks.
This has been Credit Exchange. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for joining me this week.